would. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the latest Countdown to Kickoff. We are previewing our game tomorrow against Bradford. It's me and Charlie tonight. Charlie, Tuesday night is, what, three nights ago? Minus 10s for Otto and Gustav. Are you still as warm-headed as you were on Tuesday?
Nah, I've calmed down now. It doesn't help when we record at like 11:30 after a game and we have to get the ratings in while we're still sat in our cars outside the ground. And all I could just see was like replaying in my head Ado just whacking the ball into their defenders constantly and Gustav missing sitters. That's all I could see. And I don't regret my ratings for those two. I feel like my opinions for those two are pretty clear. I put a tweet out saying that they should be playing for Peterborough Sports and I stand by it. So, I am having watched the highlights back and the extended highlights and watched a bit of the full 90 as well. There were good things out of the game on Tuesday night that I potentially overlooked. But no, I don't regret being angry because we just lost our fifth game in a row. And so anger is the only thing that's ever going to come out of me at that point.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, let's get the show started with our guests. First up, we're doing things slightly differently tonight. We've got Matt PUFC. He's going to join us first because he's got a taxi run for his kids to do. So I'm going to add him in now and we're going to ask him some questions and get the evening started. Matt, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm good. It's a Friday night and I'm looking forward to a game tomorrow. Matt, tell me about the season so far and your thoughts on things.
Well, I think it's fair to say it's not been the best start, has it? We're going to possibly equal one of our worst starts in history. And I think we were in the Championship then, so you could argue that that was a tougher start to the season. Probably our worst start in League One, being rock bottom with 0 points, one goal in the league. It's not the best, is it? I think it's kind of saps that love for the game slightly. You know, you sort of trudge in through the turnstiles, you don't really expect much to happen, and you're often not disappointed with that feeling because it's been a bit of a tough watch.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I was thinking about it today. I was like, I always used to look forward to Saturdays, and certainly after sort of February last season, the urge and the desire to go and watch Posh on a Saturday has definitely dwindled. And I sometimes think, what am I doing with my Saturday? When I think about next weekend, not to look too far ahead, Exeter getting up at 6 o'clock, then the end of September, Plymouth, that'll be probably getting up and leaving the house at 5 o'clock. Almost a bit of a disaster, really, for me. Now, Matt, you've obviously had a bit of fun today, haven't you, making some clips?
Yeah, it's possible that I might get sued. So if I go into hiding after this, you know why.
Yeah, well, I don't have your address, but you've got quite a recognisable background. So maybe I'll just be peeking through windows through Peterborough and hopefully find you. Matt, what do you want to see from tomorrow?
Well, it's going to be a tough game, isn't it? I mean, there's probably the worst time to play a team like Bradford. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. I know there's that meme, teams like Bradford are a great team. But by that, I mean they are a strong team, full of men, but know how to put a block in, will put bodies on the line, will bully us, will press us. With our confidence so low and the way we play, we've got a lot of technical ability, but we just cannot seem to get that final ball in. It's going to be a long afternoon.
Yeah, Matt. And what do you sort of, obviously, you sort of touched on the lack of quality there, but what else do you attribute to the slow start to the season that we've had so far?
I think you've got to look at recruitment, haven't you? I think ultimately, fundamentally, that's been the problem. You know, we've brought in players that aren't up to scratch, and that's a gamble we always take as Peterborough. That's our model. Maybe we've been fortunate that it's worked more times than it hasn't, but I think we can all say this time it hasn't. And I think that's been acknowledged by comments Dara's made recently in terms of trying to bring in more quality.
Yeah, and you sort of heard the comments from Dara. One of the comments that really interested me was actually about Fergie sort of telling him to pull his socks up and get on with his job. How do you view Darren Ferguson after the start of this season? How much of the blame do you think you can put at his door?
It's a confusing picture on recruitment because you hear mixed things. Sometimes you get the feeling that Dara is sort of choosing the players. Other times you get the feeling that Fergie has an involvement. With Alex Bass, it was sprung on Fergie. I mean, that's a great surprise to have, mind you, but you know, he wasn't involved in that discussion. So I do feel for Fergie if he's not got a direct hand in picking the players and he's sort of been given this squad and tried, you know, to make something of it, then you've got to feel sorry for the guy, because it, I don't think anyone else in the EFL could get a song out of this team right now.
Yeah, Matt, do you have any long-term concerns about the team? I've sort of taken the view, I don't know if you've listened and seen, is that I think that some of them aren't good enough. Those that are good enough are struggling because they've got four or five alongside them that aren't good enough. And then obviously replacements are injured, the ones that hopefully are good enough. What do you see sort of long-term for this team? Because obviously we've got lots of players on 4 or 5 year contracts now.
Right. I mean, we're entering unknown territory really with the 4 or 5 year contracts. And honestly, with Peterborough, a 4 or 5 year contract doesn't mean a lot. You know that if someone comes in for Lisby at the end of the season with £3 million offer, we're going to take it. You know, we are a selling team. That's the reality of Peterborough. Yeah, obviously some concerns. You know, you got Otto not good enough. You got Gustav not good enough. You know, didn't work out with Chris Conclark for whatever reason. And that's a big chunk of last season signings. And I think that's kind of reflected in Dara going out now and signing like Tom Lees, Matt Garbett, you know, and question mark over another striker and another CB. You know, there's obviously a recognition there's not the sort of quality there.
Yeah, and I guess looking at the sort of the rest of the transfer window, we've spoken that we're going to be quite active. I think Dara said to expect sort of 3 or 4 signings in the next 10 days. What would your priority positions be?
A winger and a striker. And you know, it's easy to say, isn't it, a striker? I mean, yeah, how many strikers are out there that are for sale in our budget that can score 20 goals? You know, there's probably close to zero. So I think we need, you know, Peterborough's wing play, isn't it? You know, we're known for our fast wingers, you know, to take on a man, get a good cross in, and we're just lacking that. You look at Odo, and you know, I sit in a family stand near the front. I see him every week. He runs up, loses the ball. Sometimes he runs past the ball. You know, sometimes he just runs straight into a defender, and you just can't get, you know, you can't get that ball in. So in the Peterborough system, to have a striker that's effective, he needs supply, and we're just not supplying, are we? We're just not getting those balls in.
Yeah, I mean, what would you do with Abraham Odo? I know I've said I'd ship him off to Peterborough Sports, but if you were, you know, Barry Fry, what would you do with the guy?
Ah, well, that's a great question, isn't it? You know, I feel for the guy because he was bought, sold the dream of Peterborough, you know, play for a season and we'll make him a millionaire. It's not going to work out here. He's just, I don't think he has the physical attributes for League One. So I think ultimately he'll end up dropping down, maybe League Two, something like that.
Matt, thinking posh long term, I think I read something that you've not been a lifetime posh fan. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly that. I started in this season, 2014, 2015, that shirt. And that's when I started sort of following posh. So, yeah, the last what, 10 years.
How did that come about?
Well, my son got into football. He was about seven, eight at the time, and he got into football. So we took him down to the local team, posh. He loved it. We loved it. So we carried on.
I assume Luke is a relative of yours because
he's
picked you up. I assume that's your son who got you into football, right?
It is indeed, yeah. That's him. It's his fault, yeah.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Although you've seen some good years. What I'm thinking back to COVID, that must have been great. Sort of you've seen relatively, you're similar to sort of me, definitely Charlie. You've only really seen posh be good, haven't you, I suppose, in those sort of 10, 11 years.
It is. And I think we maybe like that perspective. You know, I know like a lot of the older fans will mention the 80s, you know, when they didn't have hot water in the changing rooms and stuff. But for me, yeah, I've only known the DMACC era and I've only known a relative amount of success because there were some years in the 2010s where it was pretty miserable too. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, my dad had the exact same thing, wasn't really into posh at all. And then he started going because of me and my little brother. But I guess my question to you, Matt, is when do you think this needs to improve? Going back to sort of the football, are you concerned, really concerned yet? Or are you still at that point? Like I'd say a lot of posh fans are, where they're cautious, but not hitting the panic button yet.
Yeah, it depends when you ask me. If you ask me after a game, I will be in the pits of despair you know, and very reactive. And I think there should be a rule that you're not allowed to tweet for an hour after a game because, you know, it's too much. Yeah, obviously I'm concerned. Look, we're four games in. You know, I don't think anyone's expecting a result against Bradford tomorrow. You know, when are we going to get a point? You look at the fixture list, it looks pretty scary. The only hope we have is that we have players, you know, looking to come back from injury, and we have a couple of signings in Tom Lees and Matt Garbutt. You know, there is some hope. If the window had closed and this was our squad, then yeah, with relegation, you'd have to think relegation, wouldn't you?
Yeah, do you know what, Matt? I think that's a great point that you make. And I think that's probably one of my favourite things about being the designated driver on away days is that you shouldn't be allowed to tweet an hour after the game because I'm exactly that. I get in the car, I don't say anything, and then we drive. The first services, I then sit there and I scroll through to it and I think, actually, I'm glad that I didn't tweet when I was sat in the car park trying to get out of a very busy car park. But you certainly... You know, you express yourself well, I think, on your Twitter. And I think you'd love a pint with Max, because if you're reactionary, Max is definitely the most reactionary person that we've seen. Matt, tell me where you think we're going to finish this season. If, and I think, I'll add a caveat to this, I think we need to just get through the next two games. I think if we can get through Bradford tomorrow, we can get through Exeter, no expectations. There's a potential chance of an international break. So they're going to have 2 weeks off, aren't they? Where do you see us finishing realistically with the additions and potentially four more?
Realistically, even with additions, and obviously it's a big unknown. Matt Garbutt, you know, he hasn't played in the English League, so you don't know what kind of quality he has in League One. Theoretically, he should be good. He's played at a high level. It's got to be bottom half the table, isn't it? I don't think we'll get relegated. If we keep hold of Fergie, and, you know, Hughes comes back from injury and Bass comes back from injury and they don't get injured again, it's going to be a struggle, bottom half the table. I'll be surprised if we're above 16, honestly, at the end of the season.
Yeah, and going back to, you know, the game tomorrow, we've got a couple of selection decisions. One of them is that, you know, Harley Mills has dropped out of the team recently. How do you feel he started the season? I think some of the criticism of him has been really quite harsh. How do you agree with me on that? And would you put him back in next on the game tomorrow?
Yeah, the criticism has been harsh. I mean, he's a young player that really shouldn't be, you know, in the first team as a starter. He shouldn't be playing 90 minutes twice a week. It's too much, you know, for his development. And it puts him in the firing line. He's a young man. He's going to make mistakes. But when those mistakes cost goals, then it costs us, you know, points at this, you know, at a critical season, then he's only going to get criticism for it. But I think it's unfair. Would I put him back in? It depends on his confidence. If he's feeling confident and he really wants to play, then I would absolutely play him. But if his confidence has taken a knock and maybe he hasn't got that motivation to play and put himself in the firing line, then not. You know, Bradford have got a lot of strong centre-backs and wing-backs, so it would be a tough day for him.
Yeah, Matt, you sort of mentioned it there, and I think I mentioned it when we spoke on Tuesday's recording, is that Fergie made the right decision pulling James Dornelli out of the team. And I actually think that he's probably made the right decision just removing that pressure from Harley Mills, because ultimately, until we have a solid Oddo replacement, Oddo is not doing the defensive work, in my opinion, that he should be doing to support his left back. And definitely the first two games of the season, it was clear as day, balls from the opposition left back all the way over to the right wing, and they were just attacking us down that side. You mentioned previously sticking with Fergie. Do you think that there's a point in time, and I obviously got shot down when we did DMAC Live, just suggesting this, and in on reflection, I think that we stick with Fergie, and I've said before that even in League Two, what better man? What are your thoughts on whether we should get rid of Fergie if things don't turn around?
I think it's very easy to look at Fergie and just think of the first team, but you look at sort of the sort of roots he's got inside the club in terms of from the academy upwards, it would be very hard to replace that. And my question always comes back when I think about should Fergie go, or, you know, it's more likely he will walk than be sacked, let's be honest. But if he does go, then who else? You know, who else would we get that could guarantee his survival in League One with his squad? I can't think of a manager that's available, or maybe is already with another club. I just can't think of one.
Yeah, so if it's not Fergie, have you still got faith, Matt, in the process, you know, the posh way of recruiting young from lower leagues. Has your faith in that dwindled yet?
Well, you know, we do it for financial reasons. It's not really something we choose to do for success. So I accept that is the Peterborough model. I would love for DMACC to take on a partner with Deep Pockets and invest in the squad and have a real go at it. But I am okay with the model we have, knowing that we have a well-run club. I think that's more important than anything. Whether we're in League One or League Two, we have a well-run club with a good owner. I think that's ultimately priority, you know.
Matt, just finally, just before we wrap up and let you go and enjoy your evening, obviously Bradford tomorrow, can you give us a score prediction? And if we are going to score a goal, who the first posh goal scorer is going to be?
Right. So I've done your prediction league every week. And every time I pick a striker to get the goal, they just don't play. They're just not on the team sheet. So I'm tempted to say Gustav's going to score just to see if that follows through. Realistically, we're not going to score. Bradford are. I don't think it's going to be a walkover. We showed that against Luton. It's not going to be a walkover. We showed that against Barnsley. For 60 minutes, we were actually very competitive. 2-0 Bradford. That's my prediction.
Not disastrous, I don't think. No. Thank you very much, Matt, for joining us this evening. What we're going to do, guys, we're just going to play a short ad and then I'm going to join in Sam, who is a Bradford fan. But thank you again, Matt, for joining us.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
In Peterborough, match day starts long before kickoff. And whether you're heading to the pub, the ground, or just tuning into the podcast, Hyundai gets you there in comfort, style, and with room for your mates. Visit Smith's Hyundai, your local Hyundai experts and proud supporters of Up the Poshcast.
Sam, how are you? Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me on. I'm doing good. How are you?
I am as good as I can be with 5 straight defeats on the bounce and potentially a 6th to come. Obviously, talk to us about your start of the season and how that's been for you.
Yeah, excellent. I don't think we could have really asked for much better, to be honest. It was when the fixtures came out, you look at it and you see in the first 4 matches, 2 of the teams that were in the playoffs in League One last season, another team that's been relegated from the Championship, and to come away from them 3 games with maximum points was incredible. To go away to Stockport and win, I don't think there'll be many teams that do that. Drawing away at Northampton was very frustrating because we had some good chances in that game but just lacked a bit of clinical nature. That's the sort of game where you want an Andy Cook type of striker, but it's been, I genuinely couldn't have asked for any better. Even in the Carabao Cup as well, going away to Blackburn and winning, it's been a brilliant start.
Yeah, did you see this coming, Sam, when you saw the signings that were being made and felt sort of the energy around the club? Could you see you guys starting the season this well, or has it come as much of a shock to you as it has to sort of the rest of League One?
Well, I think we'd recruited pretty well on the whole. I was fairly happy. I'd probably say before the season started, maybe an 8 out of 10 with our transfer window. But looking at how some of those players have fit into the system, and it has been quite a big change. Pretty much every player who's been brought in has come in and is immediately starting. And it's just been brilliant. I don't think many people would have expected us to have had such a good start, but it is only a good start. It is only 4 games. You know, if it were the other way around and we picked up 1 point from his opening 4, we'd be always saying the opposite thing of, well, there's still 42 games to go. It doesn't mean that we're relegated. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to finish in the top 6 or wherever. We've just got to take it 1 game at a time, which I think is what we are doing. And obviously it's proven very well so far for us.
Yeah. And looking at sort of the way that the last couple of seasons have been, it seems from an outside perspective that there had been quite a lot of negativity towards the higher ups at Bradford. You know, Ryan Sparks and Stefan Rupp were getting some pelters from your fans. And there was a stage where, you know, sack the board was quite a common sort of parlance for Bradford fans. Is that still the case, or has there been some repair work done in that relationship now?
I think any time that you're winning football matches, you kind of move on from potential other issues. But it seems that the owner's now taking much more of an interest in the football club, and it's not just, we're not trying to run as a self-sustainable model, which we did for so many years in League Two, and it simply doesn't work. Not in the modern era of football, you have to spend money and the owners have to be willing to lose money. And you know, there was a protest just towards the back end of the 23-24 campaign by the fans saying, you know, this isn't good enough. We can't accept this as a football club. We need to see change. And then we brought David Sharp in as, I think, head of football operations is his job title. And ever since that, Stefan Rupp's then been investing money. You know, it was clear to see that our playing budget last year was much better than what it had been over the last couple of years. He's clearly investing money again. So there's still work to be done. I don't think it's suddenly just repaired by one promotion, because we were a top-end League One side when Stefan Rupp originally acquired us, and it had been so many years of negativity and dross and just poor mismanagement, and we were trying to squeeze every asset and every pound coin where we could because the owner just didn't want to invest money. He put in a bit during COVID, and obviously he had to keep us afloat, but there has clearly been change. It's positive signs. We're going in the right direction now. But again, for me, I think there's still work to be done, to be honest.
Sam, I just want to ask you about that promotion and that goal ultimately that came like right at the very last moment, didn't it? And just sort of, we've always been a little bit shy. Well, certainly after we got relegated from the Championship last, in getting to the final stage. Tell me about how great that was to watch that ball trickle into the back of the net.
I think the biggest feeling that I felt was just relief, because it had been so many years of just not having enough and not being able to get over the line, losing in the playoffs against Carlisle the season after, missing out on the playoffs by a point or two, something like that. And it was just so frustrating how in the last couple of games of last season, we were winning so many of them and ended up drawing or losing, and we just couldn't quite get over the line. And you saw, obviously, how bad Walsall were in the second half of the season. It was typical that they were winning in the final couple of minutes. You know, we hit the post, we have one cleared off the line. Sarswick misses an absolute sitter from 4 or 5 yards out, and you just think, it's not going to happen. It's just going to be another season. We'll fall in the playoffs and we'll probably lose in there. But the goal itself is probably one of the worst that you'll ever see. You know, it's a deflected own goal that just pings into the bottom corner. But for me, I don't think I could have asked for a better way to get promoted. If I would have known that's how we were going to have it, there's genuinely nothing that I would change. To score a 96th minute winner to win promotion after 6 or 7 years of just pain and hurt, it was, yeah, absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, and I just want to sort of talk about, obviously, last season again. You were by far and away the best team in the league in terms of home form. Like, there was nobody who picked up anywhere near as many points as you at home. But away, you're actually 16th in the league. Is that still an issue for you, do you think? Or do you think the summer recruitment has recognized that?
I think it depends largely on styles of play and how we want to play. We're not a team that wants the ball. We want the opposition to have the ball, and that's where we're dangerous. Whereas I feel like a lot in League Two, they just want to park the bus. There's not many teams that really want to play, and you're trying to break down low blocks even away from home. And we just, for whatever reason it was, you know, at home we just seemed to be able to pretty much beat anybody. We had the odd hiccup here or there, but at home we were outstanding. But away from home, we just couldn't quite find that formula. I think a lot of times we had very, very poor match officials away from home, whereas at home, when you've got 15,000-20,000 fans behind you, you know, that can really get going. But if you go into the bottom end of London, for example, and you only bring in 500 and you're getting a frustrating referee. And I think even in the first half of the season, our home form, it was okay, but it wasn't amazing. You know, we had a couple of frustrating draws and losses, all that sort of stuff. But in the second half, we had the January chance window. We recruited very well in there, and we just had good squad depth then to help us get over the line. And that's where our away form slightly picked up. It still wasn't amazing. It certainly improved so far this season. But again, it has only been a couple of away matches, so it is hard to tell, really.
Yeah, and one of the players, obviously, that was part of that squad last season is Brandon Keller. We've since signed him. He'll definitely be playing on Saturday. Tell us a bit about him from your perspective, and also about the reception that he'll receive from Bradford fans at the weekend.
I think he'll definitely get a positive reception, because he played an important part towards the back end when Smallwood ended up getting suspended. But when he first came in from Birmingham, I think a lot of fans were under the impression he was more of a number 10 who might play as a left wing back. And his game time was very limited because we had a lot of availability. People like Sarcevic and Patterson had previously had injury problems with Bradford City. So I feel like that's why Kayla came in. So it took him quite a while to get an opportunity, and even then it was 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there off the bench. But when he then came into the side playing consistently as a number six, a hold midfielder, I think you could clearly see there was a very good player in there. You know, he's physically well built, he's very good technically. I wouldn't say he's the biggest goal threat from his time at Bradford City, but I'd certainly say there's a player for the future. as of right now, I think he'd probably be our fifth choice central midfielder, which is crazy to say, because before the summer began, I would have loved to get to have got him back on a permanent basis. The same with a few of our loans from last campaign. But with the rumoured fee that you apparently spent on him, I think we've certainly recruited in it better, bringing in the likes of Jensen Metcalf, for example. I think that's a great sign. And we obviously brought in Max Powell. We've still got Alex Patterson. Tommy Lee's now playing in his natural position and looking like a very good player in central midfield. So I think he's a good player, is Kayla, but I don't think he'd even get in our matchday squad at this moment in time.
That's fair enough. Talking about your matchday squad, obviously you've got one of the oldest squads in the entire Football League and certainly in League One. Obviously that's great for now, because you're, you know, winning games and you've got the League One know-how and there's no real bedding in period. But are you concerned that later in the season with those sort of older legs, there's a chance that it might get leggy and it might get tough when we get into that really, really tough Christmas period?
I guess only time will tell, really. You never know how these players' bodies are going to react. It also depends on how we're doing cup competitions. Over the last couple of years, we've gone very far in the EFL Trophy, and that's allowed for squad rotation. And then when you're making changes, players are not coming in out the cold. They're coming in having played regular football. And I do think we've got a very good squad. Yes, it is quite ageing, but for me, I don't think it'll be that much of a problem. We have still got a lot of very good young talent that, you know, will eventually be very good resale assets, the likes of Poynton, Metcalf, Nerfville. You know, there's a fair few in that squad that I think will certainly be sold for good fees in years to come. Hopefully no time soon, though, because obviously we've only just signed the likes of Nerfville. But yeah, I guess the average age thing, for me, I'm just focusing on us winning football matches for the here and now. Having spent so many seasons in League Two, it was very important that we don't go back down to League Two. It has been a great start, and you know, I'd still be relatively happy with a 20th place finish. As long as we don't go back down, that's fine. And I feel like we needed to sign experience. Pretty much every player that we have signed has had a lot of League One experience. Some of them have had Championship experience as well, and I do think that is important. Yes, the age is quite old. I think it's just over 29, our average age of our first four starting 11s, but it doesn't concern me too much, no. Not as of right now. I guess we'll wait and see when it comes February, March, and all the pitches are boggy and stuff.
Sam, looking ahead to tomorrow, obviously Posh Fans watching, who do we need to be looking out for, and who's your danger man or danger men on the pitch?
Well, yeah, we've got a fair few at this moment in time. Obviously, it depends who plays, but Humphreys at the top end of the pitch, I think, is a real handful. He's not necessarily a traditional back-to-goal type of striker, but if he gets half a yard to shift and shoot, he's certainly got a hefty whack behind him. Then you've got Sarsvik and Poynton behind him, who've, you know, scored a couple of goals each so far this campaign. Nerfville at right wing back is absolutely rapid, very good defensively, very solid. Curtis Till at the back, you know, he wasn't the most glamorous signing a 34-year-old. He's been playing for a mid-table League Two side. I don't think many people saw that and really thought, oh, well, that's a great signing. But so far, he's been outstanding. He's so aggressive, so physical, and nobody wants to go in a 50-50 with Curtis Still, because that guy's an absolute animal. And we've got so much quality in there, but obviously you can have players who, you know, perform better on some other days. I think somebody like a Bobby Poynton plays extremely well at home, massively stands out, but then the couple of away games he's played so far this season, I do think he has struggled a little bit. But we've got a very good squad. We've not got that many injuries at this moment in time. I think only five or six, so I think there's just a lot of quality in our squad. I wouldn't really say there's one specifically to watch, because you even look at our bench, you've got the likes of Will Swans coming off the bench. He had a great impact on Tuesday and has looked quite good so far. But I think if I had to pick one player for tomorrow, I'd probably say Stephen Humphreys, because the way he plays, and I feel like against your centre-backs, I feel like he could maybe have a field there.
Yeah, do you know what? Stephen Humphreys is an interesting one, and I'm glad that you said that, because he's always somebody that whenever Posh have played in that I've not really been too concerned by. He's never really sort of set the world alight, but it really looks like he's enjoying his time at Bradford, and it looks like you're managing to get something out of him. Do you think that's a fair reflection?
Yeah, from what we've seen so far, obviously he came in from Barnsley, and I think it's probably fair to say he probably will be our highest earner. And there's a lot of expectation. And when he came in, I think everybody thought he was going to play as that left attacking midfielder, because he'd thrived for Barnsley playing as a left winger, scored five in his last five towards the back end of last campaign. But then seeing him play as a striker, and then hearing Alexander and then Humphreys himself coming out, and they're all saying that, no, he is going to play as a striker. He's only going to play as a striker. If he wants his career to go where he wants it to go, which I can only assume is to be playing regularly in the Championship, he needs to be playing as a striker. And he doesn't want the ball 7 foot in the air. He doesn't really challenge for many headers. But if he gets half a yard, he will shift, and he's very good at creating that half a yard for himself. And even without much of a run-up, he can get, you know, a very powerful strike behind him. And I don't think we've seen the best of Stephen Humphries yet. I think he's certainly somebody who'll get better and better. There has been the odd instance where it's maybe looked a bit frustrating from the fans' point of view, where because he doesn't really challenge for those headers, it can look like that he's maybe, I won't say throwing a sulk, but he's just, you want to see your players challenging. But then when he gets the ball and he's turning and he's taking players on, he can sometimes be a little bit greedy, but I just think he's got that kind of star quality, that gold dust that you can sometimes need. And I certainly do think he could be somebody come the end of the season who ends with a lot of goals and assists.
Yeah, talking about a lot of goals, obviously Andy Cook is a player who last season had, you know, heartbreaking news with injury, and you adapted really well in the end to not having him, but that must have felt like a massive blow. What is the current prognosis on him? Is there any chance of him being involved tomorrow in any way?
Oh no, there's absolutely no chance he'll be involved tomorrow. Obviously, he did his ACL on New Year's Day, and I think it was only a couple of weeks ago he was back in full training, but it's very much one day in, one day out. I don't think he'll be back until around October time. And there's obviously been a lot of questions since Cook's injury. Say, you know, some people tell you that we're a better team without him. Certainly last season, we were absolutely not a better team without Andy Cook. There were so many games, especially in them sort of away games, where we just couldn't quite get over the line, where you miss somebody like an Andy Cook, somebody who guarantees 20, 25 goals a season in League Two. Coming now into League One, you know, Andy Cook's probably one of my favourite ever players to wear the Bradford City shirt. He's given, you know, the fans some great memories, scored a load of different goals, very important goals as well. You know, he's certainly a big game player. I don't think anybody will forget that 31 goal season that he got a couple of years ago under Mike Hughes. But Stephen Humphries obviously is coming to play with the money he's probably on. Will Swan has looked very good so far. You've got young Callum Kavanagh as well. So we've certainly got options at the top end of the pitch, but I am interested to see how we go about fitting all those players in when Cook does come back from injury, because he is probably a modern day club legend. And obviously he's now into the final year of his contract. I think he's certainly going to have a point to prove, because there was a lot of criticism from him for him on social media, and a lot of people sort of mocking his injury. But I think that'll only motivate him. He's the sort of player that when he gets that fire in his belly, I wouldn't be surprised if he still ends up on 15 goals come the end of the season.
Yeah, that is a great shout. And yeah, I think he's someone that Posh fans will be very glad not to see involved in the squad. In terms of, from your perspective, what do you view Posh as this season from a completely outside view? Do you know a lot about our team, and where do you think the threat is if you were going to have concerns ahead of the game?
Well, over the last couple of years, it seems like your squad's just massively deteriorated. There was always, for me, a lot of fear whenever you play against Peterborough. You know, obviously the last time we played with you, we were rocking, you know, your Marcus Madison's, your Ivan Tony's. Obviously a lot's changed since then, but even your squad 2 years ago when you got Ronnie Edwards and, you know, Josh Knight, and then you've got Poku and Mason Clark and them sort of players, to what it is now, there's clearly a lot of potential there. And obviously there's been a lot of money spent on that squad. There's been a lot that obviously so far haven't come off, but I would say there's obviously pace, there's obviously going to be quality, and I'm just hoping tomorrow's not going to be one of them days where it just all seems to click for you. I think defensively is where we could get at you, especially on set pieces, that sort of thing. You know, we're going to be big, we're going to be physical. That's the sort of areas, getting balls into the boxes, where I think we could hurt you. If you're going to play a heavily possession-based style, we struggled playing against Stockport on Tuesday, but that is because the quality in their squad is absolutely outrageous, especially in that first half. But I think any other possession-based side, like your Wickhams and your Lutons, with the press that we put on, a lot of teams just struggle to play out from that at all. And I do think if you are going to do that, it probably would be a mistake, but I think that's certainly the identity that you've tried to create over the last couple of years, isn't it?
Yeah, and it would be remiss of me not to ask. On Tuesday night, obviously, against Stockport, how was Malik Mothersill? We're keeping an eye on him. He's just left Posh. Was he a big threat?
He was okay. I wouldn't say he was a big standout. I think Jack Diamond playing on the other side was, you know, he looked very dangerous. Mothersill had a couple of shots, but didn't really trouble us all too much. I think he was subbed off quite early on into the second half. I don't think he really did much to note, to be honest.
Yeah, and just talk us through briefly, what is the sort of the shape of your team going to be tomorrow? Obviously, it'll be a back three, but what is the general setup, and how does your build-up play look?
So normally this season we've played the 3-4-2-1 with two attacking midfielders behind a striker. But at halftime on Tuesday, because we were getting played off the park by Stockport, we changed to a three in midfield and then two strikers as well. So I think we will stick with the 3-4-2-1 because that's, you know, what we've worked on the most. But we certainly can adapt and go to the two up front. We're not normally a team that'll play out from the back. We tried to do it on Tuesday and conceded from it. I don't really know why we tried to do that. We're very much get the ball into Humphreys, try and play off him. I wouldn't say it's just hoofball, big boot and run. You know, we've certainly got midfielders who can get on the ball. They can drive forward. We've got two very good wing-backs as well who'll get forward. They'll get balls into the box. Our centre-halves, the wide centre-halves will sometimes overlap as well. So we certainly commit bodies. We're going to be high-pressing. We're going to win as duels, I think that's fair to say as well. And, yeah, hopefully score a fair few goals.
Sam, you have got me petrified for tomorrow, if I'm being completely honest. The confidence, and I think I've probably got a bad habit of saying this over the last few countdown to kickoffs that we've done, is that I go in with a bit of faith, and then we speak to the opposition fan and I very quickly have little to no faith that Peterborough United are going to get a result. Just before we close up this little segment, what do you think the score is going to be? And assuming that you think that Bradford are going to score, tell me who the first goal scorer is going to be for Bradford.
Well, it's very hard to say, because as much as we've had a great start and you've had a bad start, it would be the most Bradford City thing ever to beat your Stockports, your Lutons, your Wickhams, and then lose 1-0. That is what I predicted, because it is just so Bradford City. I also wouldn't be surprised if we do put you to the sword, because we seem to have turned a corner a little bit under Graham Alexander. But if I was to give a prediction, I'll go 1-0 Brandon Curler.
Oh, interesting. Well, I think that's probably the first time this season that somebody's predicted Posh to win, certainly an opposition fan.
Hopefully a bit of reverse psychology.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a few. Matt, who we had on previously, replied to our tweet earlier saying that we could only go up to 99. So if it's anything more than that, he wants the maximum points in our predictions league that we've got. But thank you, Sam, for joining us tonight. Obviously, I assume we'll see you at the game tomorrow and you'll have a vlog out. When will that vlog be out for anybody that's watching?
Probably early hours Sunday morning, I would say.
If you tag us in that tweet when you post it out, we'll be sure to share it onto our socials. But thank you again for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me on.
Cheers, Sam.
Right, Chaz. Well,
we are cooked, aren't we?
I think so. Any small amounts of confidence that I had after that, Sam has blown it completely out of the water. I am concerned now. Right now, as we always do, it'd be rude not to go back through all of the comments. We'll start with Peter Shaw, who wants to know, would Mills in your view be good as a permanent winger in a game?
If we were still playing like the way we used to play, where like Joe Ward was a good winger in our system, then probably, yeah. But I don't think in this system, he's just not quite got that. And also, he'd have to play on the right, really, because we want to stick to the inverted thing. I don't know. I don't think he's got the pace to play as a winger in our system. He's got the quality of cross, I think, and he's good going forward. But I don't think he's a good fullback. And I think he will be a great fullback for us. He just needs time. You know, like he will have his. I'm very confident, and this may be jinxing him, but I've said this before. I'm very confident Mills will have a Burrows season at some point and just completely explode. And I think as a fullback, there's a reason why he had still only this summer had massive interest from massive football clubs, because he is a fantastic player and we just need to give him a bit of a chance.
Yeah, I think Harley Mills is an interesting one. And I saw a few comments about he's so like Burrows. But I actually think that Harley Mills is probably slightly further ahead than Harrison Burrows was, because Harley Mills is a left back ultimately. Like, he's not learning a position. Of course, he's learning EFL football, but he's not learning how to be a left back. He's pretty much been one since ever I've known that he's been at Posh. So I think that he'll be okay. I think that actually, like I mentioned earlier on, I think protecting him, especially when we're in a poor vein of results, is important, though.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say, by the way, I do not rule out this season being Harley Mills' season, like, at this point. Do you remember Burrows at the start of the season where he was really good and then won League One Player of the Season? Everyone was calling him to be Dropford's Zach Sturge in, like, September. Everyone wanted him gone because he got cooked by Derby and a couple of other games. I think he was really bad away at Portsmouth. just give the guy a chance. Like, I didn't like him being hooked at halftime against Wigan, unless he asked to be hooked or he had a fitness issue. I said on the podcast, I thought he should have come on and would have made a good impact on Tuesday night. I will be fully hoping and expecting him to start tomorrow. And if he doesn't start and we look really poor going forward again, I'll probably question that decision from Fergie. Just chill out on Harley Mills, everyone, because he is far from our biggest problem at the moment.
Yeah, I also think as well that one thing that we've missed in sort of the last, 135 minutes of football that we've watched is that corner ball in from the in-swinger. Is that Keller's obviously taken them, and Keller's got a good free kick on him, but you can't be an in-swinging corner, and the free kicks as well that he offers. So it's really tough. I think Charlie will definitely talk what starting lineups we're going to go for, but yeah, for me, I don't think that I'd be putting Mills in, but maybe bringing him on, like you said, when we need a change, if we need to go attacking.
Yeah, I mean, I'll touch on it more. But also, you just mentioned the corners there. By the way, at Wigan, that chance that Keller put over the bar from 2 yards, that was a fantastic Harley Mills delivery. That should have been 1-1. So it's all about moments. And yeah, young players like Harley Mills, they have moments, don't they? And they have bad moments and they have good moments. He's in a bad moment right now, Harley Mills. Or not a great moment. I wouldn't say he's in a bad moment, but he's not in a good one. But, you know, you've got to help these young players through it, and you've got to nurse them through it. And if he needs time out of the team, give it to him. But I don't think he does want time out of the team. He doesn't strike me as the character who will have been happy sat on the bench on Tuesday night. I'll say that.
Yeah, one player who is not having a good moment currently, and I would like to call Rafty out on this comment. Did Otto play well last season? Did Otto have a good couple of games in the second half of last season? Was that it? Chaz, talk to me.
I think Odo had a good first season, actually. I'm one of the unpopular views, but he did not have a good season. He had a good first season. He had good moments. He showed potential. You know, the Crawley away was a fantastic performance. Shrewsbury at home, you know, early in the season, he was good at, you know, away at Shrewsbury and away at Exeter. And he had some good performances littered throughout the season. He had some bad performances, but that's what you expect from a new signing, really. Like, if there'd been no pressure placed on his shoulders from the start, then he would have been fine last season. He got 20 goal contributions. That is a decent return from a winger in their first season. The issue was, you know, even from the day he was announced, Dara said it's hard to replace a player like Ephraim Mason-Clark, but here's Abraham Odo, who's going to get bums off seats. And, you know, everyone was expecting him to be this massive Mason-Clark replacement. He wasn't that. But then this season needs to be his breakout season. He should have been on it from game one. You know, this is the season where he really earns his money, and this is the season where he really, you know, becomes a key player for us. And I've just seen nothing since the players reported back for pre-season that's shown that he's going to do that. So I don't think Odo had a good season last season. I think he had an okay start to his posh career, but already he's shown to me that he's not going to be the player that we need him to be this season. And if we were given any sort of bid for him, I would accept it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, do you know what? I've just thought about that now, and I actually think that probably does come down to an Otto. We think about being able to remove players from the team, and Otto ended up probably having to play too much last season because Mothersill was our left winger initially. Then we had to take Con Clark out. We lost Randall, and then all of a sudden it was, well, we've basically got four players. That's our front four. We don't really have the ability to rotate. So maybe Otto is suffering from that a little bit, and it's maybe just a little bit of a hangover from last season. I'm going to run through some of the predictions. There's an awful lot of confidence in the YouTube comments. So Charlie Newman thinks that Kean Hayes is going to score 2 tomorrow and Posh are going to win 2-1, sorry. Darren Johnson with a 2-1 Posh win also. Frith and Lisby. I can get behind that a lot more than Kean Hayes, definitely. Declan Moody with another 2-1. So that's 3 2-1s on the bounce. Brad and Brandon Keller getting the two goals. A draw there. Brad from the penalty spot, although that's a loss. Dean, who must be a Bradford fan, isn't bothered about the result. He's City till he dies. Fair enough. I think that we are all Posh like that at the moment. 3-1, Posh, Lisby, Lolly. Three different goal scorers there. That is an interesting one. Richard Wesley, I think this is way off it. But I think that Kean Hayes needs to learn to shoot first before he's got an even sniff of scoring a hat trick. Fingers crossed, I hope he does, but he's seriously got pulling the triggeritis, I think, at the moment. So what's this one here? I love Posh. When I was there Tuesday in the line, it was announced there was some sense of relief, but we need to get to a point when we sub players, we're not hearing the crowd moan about who's on. Yeah, I think that's a good point. That was an interesting thing from Fergie's interview today, was that the crowd on Tuesday night didn't really drop off, did it, in a sense? Like, it was never loud the whole game, but fans certainly didn't get on the backs of the team in a negative way, I didn't think. Charlie, you agree?
Yeah, I actually thought it was a really decent atmosphere on Tuesday night, much better than I was expecting it to be, especially in that second half when we were kicking towards the London Road end. You know, I sit right by it and the noise coming out of it was good, and there was a roar and the players were responding to that, and it felt like the players and the fans were really together on Tuesday night, which was good to see after sort of what happened after the Wigan game, with a couple of fans really giving it to the players and the players looking quite hurt by that, and, you know, some retaliating. It was really nice to see a sense of togetherness. But listen, I think there is something to be said, Ben, for the fact that I'm never going to see Abraham Odo putting it on his match shirt and go, here we go, let's go, like, we're in here. I'm never going to do that. I'm always going to be, oh God, we need to change a game and this is who we're bringing on. You know, Abraham Frodo, he's washed. And I agree with him. He is just not the player that we need to be bringing on. I mean, I'm surprised to see all the confidence in the comments, by the way, from our fans, because what Sam's just told us is that Bradford are basically the anti-Posh. They're great from set pieces. They don't really, like, get caught on the break a lot because they've got a bit of maturity. That sounds like, you know, literally the worst possible team Posh could be playing right now. They're physical. They've got the know-how. They're a bit of shithousy. That's literally the perfect team to beat Posh right now. So I don't know where the confidence is coming from. But listen, I think it will be okay tomorrow. And I do think if we lose badly, it will get toxic. But I think it will be another case of the fans will be ready to go, and it will be a good atmosphere. And if we go ahead, I think the fans will really get behind the team to defend that lead, which is why I think the first goal is so important. I don't think the toxicity has fully set in yet. And I also think, you know, with the promise of the signings that are going to come over the next few weeks, the club have bought themselves a bit of time in terms of before the fans truly turn. But yeah, there was a good atmosphere on Tuesday night, and I think it will be much of the same on Saturday.
Do you know what? One thing that I do want to praise as well is actually the lad that is on the drum, like, and bringing it to the front actually is really helping it project through the stadium. I know that when they have it at the back and it's sort of that pesky London Road roof that we have, at least when it's at the front, you can sort of hear it and you can see he's trying his hardest. Like, obviously, the players will have to help him out at some point, won't they, and start performing on the pitch. I think a goal is so important for tomorrow. So that probably does link us quite nicely into our predictions, which I'm going to pull up on the screen. Now, there's not really too much to say here, if I'm being completely honest. John and Lods are as negative as can be and have gone with a 2-0 loss. No goal scorer, obviously, for that one. I've gone for a 2-1 Posh win. I'm feeling optimistic, or at least I was when I submitted these predictions. I think Lisby's going to get a first goal, and I think that's going to be great for him and really give him the confidence. Charlie, talk us through your prediction.
I've gone 1-0. Yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty even game. Keller, I feel like players scoring against their old club is always something that I can get behind. And I do think, listen, Sam obviously thinks that's going to happen because he's predicted a 1-0 win for us with a Keller goal. I think Keller has gone really close now in a couple of games. You know, he hit the bar on Tuesday night. He put one over inexplicably, really, from 2 yards at Wigan on Saturday. I criticised him a bit in the week for a bit of a lack of quality in the final third, and I stand by that. But also, that's not me saying that he doesn't have the quality. It's just me saying that he's not showing it. And I think, yeah, a nice little moment of magic from Keller. It's going to be a great goal. And it'll be nice to score a goal at home in front of that home crowd, because obviously we were there on the opening day at Cardiff, but there's a lot of Posh fans who only go to home games that haven't experienced like a goal this season yet. So it'll be great for them to get that. And hopefully that'll just calm some of the negativity a bit.
Yeah, agree. Just going back to the other host, Dell with a 2-2 and Brad first goal scorer. I think that's now the third game in a row that Dell has predicted that scoreline and that first goal scorer. I mean, if you throw it at the wall enough, it'll probably start to stick, won't it? Harry's matched what I predicted, and Max has gone with a Posh 1, Bradford 1, with Matthew Garbutt scoring the first goal. Which, now, Charlie, shall we talk about who we're going to start tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go on, you go first. You go.
I mean, I'll just talk through my team. In goal, Reyes is a pretty obvious pick, isn't he? We're not gonna suddenly bring back Bielo. As much as I'm sure some people would love it just for sort of the banter, we're not gonna do that. And Reyes has been good in the last couple of games. I felt he's been decent. He was good on Tuesday night. I would bring Mills back in. I think that's one of the big points of contention. I think the natural balance that having a left footer at left back gives us is good. I do like Mills as a player, and I think him being out of the team and watching that game from the sideline on Tuesday night is going to be really helpful for him. I'd then put CJ back over to right back. I would drop James Dornelli, which is harsh because Dornelli was actually quite good on Tuesday, but I just think, you know, he's another one that we just need to measure his minutes a bit. Centre back now. Tom Lees is apparently fit. Would you start him? I don't know. I actually thought Dave and Nevitt were okay on Tuesday night. And also, Nevitt would probably be the one that would get dropped. And does he deserve that after he was, you know, one of the men of the match on Tuesday night? Maybe not. But I would put Lees in just for a bit of experience. It seems like Bradford, that team, Lees will hopefully help us defend at the back. I'd go Lees and Akagbue. And then my midfield three will be Keller, Collins, and hopefully Garbutt if he's fit. I mean, he is fit, but if he's ready to start, I want to see Garbutt play. I haven't really seen a lot of him, and I'm really excited. Apparently, he's like a different animal, so I want to see him play. He'll probably be more in the 10, Garbutt, or him and Keller can sort of rotate, or maybe we play the 4-3-3. And then I'd go Lisby on the left, fantastic on Tuesday night, deserves to keep his place. Frith, if he's ready, on the right, I enjoyed his cameo. And then up top, I'd actually go for Clady Lolos. I think Brad needs to come out of the team. I think Gustav Lindgren needs to be nowhere near the team. And Lolos, you know, Fergie said in his interview today that he really does see him as a viable option up front, whether on his own or with a partner. I would put Lolos up top. That would be my team selection.
Yeah, do you know what, Charlie? I think that was probably one of the biggest indications, wasn't it, that we may see a change in that number nine role, is Fergie's interview. And ultimately, Brad probably hasn't performed to the level that Fergie wanted. That's not to say that it's his career over. I think that Gustav is probably 5 or 6 steps behind him anyway. But if we're saying that Lolos can provide that little moment or that little bit of magic that we need, we saw him, that his close control is exceptional, I think, from Lolos. And we saw it in and around the box at Wigan, didn't we? That he could probably fashion himself a chance and create something from nothing. The only change that I would probably have, or I think there's two actually from what you said, I don't think that Lees is going to start tomorrow. I think that Lees will be the one that if we are 1 or 2 up and we need to see out a lead, we'll bring him on. Because like you say, I don't think it would be fair on Nevitt to take him out of the team. The only flip side of that is, do we need to protect Nevitt? We know that some games he looks fantastic and some games he looks relatively poor. If the issue is with Lees is we don't want him to get 30 minutes down the line, be absolutely blowing, and then have to make a sub after 30 minutes. I'd rather do it the other way around and bring Lees on to help us see hopefully a win over the line. And I don't think I'd be bringing Mills in. I think that I would keep Johnston at left back and Dornelli. But other than that, your midfield three and then front three are all exactly the same as mine. Before we go, Charlie, you may have noticed when you were working through your team that I started laughing at the comments again. Howard Moon has said that diehard fans come to the Tuesday games. All of the moaners will be in the London Road End tomorrow. Just you watch. And then he decided to go on an onslaught for your curtains, asking how you sleep with curtains. Yes, that's been Charlie.
I don't know if he's mocking my hair. Maybe. Or when I first read that, I immediately thought hair, because I get lots of live comments about, or does he mean these? Because if he's talking about these, I have a fun fact for him, which, hang on, give me 1 second.
I'll play host and hold.
Right, watch this. Howard, this is going to blow your mind. Look at that. The blinds come down, they're completely black out, and then that's how I sleep. So these curtains are purely to protect my modesty when it's daytime, so that the windows aren't completely see-through. But no, I put the blinds down to sleep, and that's how it works, Howard. But I appreciate your concern.
With blinds like that, I don't think that you are ever beating the allegations of being a mega Tory, unfortunately. But with that one, I think we're probably done. So thank you for everybody that's been in the comments. Thank you for everyone that's watched. Thank you for everybody that will listen on a Saturday morning. We will be back Monday at 7 o'clock. Before we go, if you are listening to this before Sunday, please, I would simply love to see hundreds of people down supporting the women at Pimm's Park. We've had a big push on it. Obviously, we did an interview midweek with Jake Poole, the manager. It's really important. It's really exciting as well that they're playing in Peterborough, the women are playing in Peterborough, and it's exciting football. Lods has mentioned it on a Twitter comment this week, is that you've got to give it a chance. And anyone that hasn't given it a chance, this Sunday is the perfect time to give it a chance. And if you are down there and you see myself, Lods will be there, I think Dell's coming as well, please give us a tap on the shoulder and say hello, because there's nothing that I love more than meeting people that watch this podcast. Because, you know, I've said before, we're miles ahead of where we thought we would be after a year, but it ultimately is going well, let's say. But thank you everyone for listening. Charlie, thanks for joining me tonight. I'm going to press the end stream thing. There is a slight issue when you press end stream, it lags. So pull your nicest face, Charlie, for the next 5 seconds.
Oh, that's bad.